Hey guys, welcome to Talkin' Shop, the e-commerce strategy podcast for merchants who are serious about growing their business. We'll be here every week with a brand new episode to help you unlock the secrets to scaling your business for long-term growth. Let's talk shop.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Talking Shop with Zyber. As always, my name is Waldo and I am joined by my fabulous co-host, Leonardo. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing very well, sir. Can you believe it? Actually, I should ask you first, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, actually. Not too bad. Got a bit of sunburn, but she's all right.
She's all right. I was just going to say, can you believe episode 50?
What?
How quick have we done this? I think you were mentioning it's taken us a year.
Yeah. So I think our first episode was October 28th of last year. And I guess before we kick straight into it, mate, can you remember why did we even start this podcast?
I remember, I think you were sitting on one side of the office and I would sit on the other and we would shout across the office like techniques, like, have you tried this CRO technique? Does your client know this one? Are you using this app? And then we realized like, actually, there's a lot of people that want this sort of advice and we're just shouting it. We should probably record it and put it on the airwaves. And I think that was one of the reasons.
Yeah. And I remember us sitting in, you know, sales meetings or client meetings or just brainstorming sessions in our boardroom and just working out some strategies for customers. And you constantly saying, man, that needed to be recorded. Man, we should have recorded that. Like, that was such a good bit of banter, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, full circle. Here we are 1 year later, guys. It's our last episode of the year, getting ready for the Christmas holiday breaks. And like Leo said, it's our 50th episode, which I can tell you right now, I never thought that we'd get to. Did you?
Oh, yeah. No, I knew we would.
Confident.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, we went full circle. We started in a rented studio. Then we built our own studio and then we got struck down by COVID. So now it looks like we're in a studio, but we're not. It's just a virtual background. I'm just chilling in the office. But without further ado, guys, I would love to introduce to you today our very, very special guest, which we earmarked for this particular episode. If we could get to 50, we'll get somebody that's in the know. And he's an entrepreneur, a husband, a father, a CEO, co-founder, and operations manager of a Shopify Plus partner or agency, and the host of the unofficial Shopify podcast with over 380 episodes, 1.5 million downloads. Welcome, Kurt.
Oh, thank you for having me. But two problems. A, it's 1.7 million, but who's counting? And two, you mispronounced it. The correct pronunciation, you have to get the accent right. I know I'm American, Midwestern, but the right way to say it is unofficial Shopify podcast.
Woo-hoo! Love it.
Loving that energy.
I'm glad you brought your sound effects with Mr. Tech Nasty.
Tech Nasty.
No, you teed it up for me. Should have been a little quicker with it.
That's all.
Can I just right off the bat, just ask you the most important question that needs to be asked? That soundbite, does that soundbite get stuck in your head and you say it out loud throughout the day? Because it happens to me when I listen to your podcast, Kurt.
I do. In fact, I use it as an exclamation around our house. If I'm like 10 of 10 excited, occasionally, yes. My wife and kids could confirm. I have yelled Tech Nasty in my own house more than once in the last 7 days.
I am so glad I'm not the only one. The other day I cooked a really good roast that came out of the oven and I was like, Tech Nasty. And my wife was like, excuse me. And so I just wanted to make sure that other people around the world are doing what I just did and what you do. So I feel good now. Okay, that was the most important question.
Do you know who that little soundbite is made by or whose voice
that is? I do. And I didn't know this until a couple of episodes ago that Kurt mentions it on his podcast. Tell us who it is, Waldo.
It's Ezra Firestone. Shopify's number one affiliate marketer, the smart marketer guy, Zipify, all over the place.
And he's now one of Shopify's first commerce coaches, was it, or e-commerce coaches, I think they called it?
Yeah, there was like commerce coach is the title bestowed upon him.
Yeah.
It's like being knighted.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it Tech Nasty merchandise?
Not yet. Well, we'll get to it.
I'm down. I'll support you. I'll buy that stuff. I want a Tech Nasty t-shirt, Tech Nasty hoodie. I'm in.
Keychain.
Okay, what? Jack Nasty.
Now we all love Ezra. Yeah, as Kurt mentioned, obviously One Click Upsell, Zipify, Smart Marketer, you name it. I'm a big fan of e-commerce world, which I've now attended twice, only virtually, and always love the presentations and talks that he gives there. But speaking of, I mean, you've interviewed some pretty cool people as well in the Shopify space. Do you want to drop some names for us?
Oh, geez. Well, sir, Ezra's a recurring guest.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting about it, the episodes that you would think that like have interesting people on it are not the popular ones. Like, I think the number one episode is like homepage design made simple. It's the really practical stuff that just like, hey, here's how to get started. Here's what to do. That's the stuff that really resonates with people. The episodes that I get excited about, no one else seems to care about. I think that's what's interesting about it. One of the recent ones I really liked was CrossNet, Chris Mead from CrossNet, who bootstrapped a business with like no money, had no idea what he was doing, and went and manufactured a combo volleyball four square net, and then didn't know what to do with it. And so they didn't have any money to market it because they'd spent it on the prototypes. So they would just go play it on a beach and then just leave the net there. And it would last for like 3 weeks before somebody stole it. And that was the guerrilla marketing they did. And they're like, that's the stuff that really excites me.
That's a good idea. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I actually had a look at that, four way volleyball. And I was trying to figure out how to work it, but I didn't have enough time when I was investigating it to go deeper, but what a cool idea. Definitely. It's insane. But speaking of cool ideas, I mean, you starting the Unofficial Shopify podcast this was a while ago now, I mean, 380 plus episodes. Why did you do it?
You know, I wanted an excuse to buy a microphone. I think was part of it. No, the larger reason was at the time I really struggled with social anxiety disorder, but I also found myself having to do business dev for an agency to sell agency services, to keep the lights on. And so those two things weren't terribly compatible. And the solution I decided was, at the time, a buzzword called inbound marketing. And really, you know, today we just call that content marketing. And so the idea was, hey, if I could just be myself in a medium like podcasting and interview interesting people, that's my continuing education. And I can learn, people can learn along with me. And then people get a sense of who I am. And if they want to reach out to me, great. And at that point, there is no hard sales pitch because I'm myself on the show. So you already feel like you know me. Now, and then that works well for me because when someone talks to me and they're already comfortable, that puts me at ease. No more social anxiety. Now today, you know, 5-6 years later after starting it, the show, you know, doing hundreds of interviews, I worked through the social anxiety with the show. So this is very helpful.
Yeah, that's awesome. And there's some real similarities between, I mean, as I mentioned in the intro, you own a Shopify Plus agency called EtherCycle, or co-owner, CEO, founder. But you started that in 2009. And Zyber, which is the agency that Leo and I work for, we started this in 2009. And then you decided exclusively to go over to Shopify and only you dropped a bunch of projects and actually just shifted your focus to Shopify around 2014. Well, guess what?
That's right.
We did exactly the same thing at exactly the same time.
Well, hitched your cart to the right horse, certainly at the right time.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. Like, what were some of the driving factors there? Did you see the writing on the wall?
So it's kind of, no, I wish I was that smart and aware. And the reality is I'm risk averse, but mostly I just don't want to be hassled. So like in 2009, I had decided with not knowing what I didn't know, I said, let's go build our own e-commerce platform. Well, it turns out that's not that easy. Yeah. And to keep the lights on though, we started doing web design and development work and we started selling WordPress sites. And, you know, I sold a site for $2,000. I couldn't believe it. Sold a site for $7,000. I thought like, I'm waiting for the cops to come knock on the door, selling a website project for $7,000. What madness is this? And pretty quickly we moved up the ladder and suddenly we're doing projects. We're doing fulfillment for big creative agencies in Chicago and working on stuff for brands like Hilton Hotels. And the downside to that was we hated it, truly. And at the same time, I had built, I had a friend who had a bike shop come to me and say, you know, we don't like our platform. We just want something easy to use. What, you know, the web, what do? And I said, I heard about this thing called Shopify that I think will do what you want. And again, not knowing whether to know, I said, let's just build a custom theme for this on Shopify. And it actually would, you know, it's simultaneous. We're doing WordPress and at the time, more limited nature of, and this was several years ago, of what you could do with Shopify. That was very freeing. And with e-commerce, you know, with like brochure site design on WordPress, someone could be like, my dog doesn't like blue, so that can't be blue. That kind of nonsense. Whereas with e-commerce, everything is tied back to a KPI. It is data-driven business goals. So you could tell me like, hey, the horse has, or the website has to make horse noises every time you click on something. And then I could show you how that murdered your conversion rate, right? That is the amazing part of e-commerce. And so we went from like, having creative directors who greatly enjoyed the smell of their own farts telling us how we were doing things wrong, then, you know, in the WordPress universe, to going to Shopify with e-commerce, where everything was really goal-based. And it was just entrepreneurs who just wanted to succeed. And I fell in love with it. And it took me a while before I went, wait, why am I doing anything else? Like, there's the thing I hate and the thing I enjoy. Why am I doing the thing I hate? And so I said, well, you know, let's just double down on this. And at this simultaneously, I said, well, I got to be able to market it. So, and we're starting, you know, fairly early. Let's do a podcast about the journey. So like, I can go back 380 episodes and listen to the most painful episodes ever, but I leave it up. I leave it published because it's real. It's true. It's authentic. And it's that journey documented.
Yeah. Yeah. That was great. I mean, there's going to be a lot of agencies listening to this. So I kind of want to go back to some of the things you just mentioned there. I think Waldo and I went through the same thing when we used to sell, you know, a $1,000 website, a $2,000 website. And I remember we had these packages, you know, like, oh, you could be on the $7,000 website. And we would get so excited. You had to ring this bell when you'd walk back into the office. And it was like, oh my gosh, if I, you know, look at, yeah, exactly. But if I think now $7,000, I'm like, we're not even touching that. Like, it's just amazing what e-commerce has done for us. And it took us, Kurt, a long time to also double down and just go Shopify only. And we tried our own things, tried to build our own e-commerce platform. From at the start, we even built our own CRM. We paid one developer over $100,000 for a year project for a CRM that probably lasted like 4 months.
Oh, geez, Rick.
That's right. That's right. So we've gone through those learning curves, but I think the smartest thing, as we're talking about here, is we doubled down on the right platform, and it's been a hell of a ride.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, hindsight's 2020, but at the time, you know, Shopify was not this huge platform with over a million merchants. It was a smaller, newer thing. And, you know, Magento was probably the gold standard at the time. And so, you know, committing to only this thing seemed scary. But what I liked was the partner aspect of it. When they saw that I had built that Amling store, they reached out to me. Dan Evelé in the partner program reached out and said, hey, we've got this thing called Shopify Experts. It looks like you built a custom theme. That's really cool. Do you want to join? I said, sure, why not? And then like the first lead I got through it was Bandon Dunes Golf Course. There's a big deal, golf course in the United States. And I thought, you know, with that kind of thing happening, it was easier to say, all right, let's go all in on Shopify and commit to this.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah. I mean, Shopify myself, you know, I go back to say 2016, 17, where I was very pro Magento, WooCommerce. I was like, nah, why would you go down Shopify? That's just for mom and dad selling soap out of a garage. You know what I mean? Like, don't be silly. And then, you know, coming full circle back to Zyber and joining up with a Shopify partner that is at the time was just doing websites on Shopify itself, and then seeing the power of it. But then actually, the reason why I judged it was also because I wasn't so, I didn't know about this ecosystem in and around it. And I think the partner network is probably one of Shopify's most powerful tools that they have, don't you reckon?
That's the magic. Yeah. It's that they really invest in supporting that partner ecosystem, and helping it thrive.
And I mean, last year was close to $5 billion generated through the partner network, which, you know, Shopify making that amount of money for their partners in and around themselves, having a share price of, I don't know, it's probably over $1,500 US today or thereabouts anyway. Speaking of, did you buy Shopify shares, Kurt?
I did. I got in on the IPO. And I felt
very good.
Mother. Nice. You know, we all talked about it in the office and none of us did. And then I finally got in about $300 and I've been riding that wave. But yeah, we always talked about it like, oh, it's 20. Well, for us, it was $20. I think for you guys, it was like $17. We're like, oh, it's $20. I don't know. We should probably buy it. Yeah, I should.
Again, hindsight 2020, had any of us gone all in on Shopify stock when it was an IPO and just held till now, we would all be, we wouldn't be talking because we would be too busy shopping for our new yacht. I mean, we'd be multimillionaires.
I think yachts. Yeah,
we need yachts, more than plural. One.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Would your yacht be called Tech Nasty on the side?
You know, I would have to let my wife name the yacht.
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. What a gentleman.
Now, speaking of your wife, it's a good segue. I mean, your wife is also in e-commerce and she's also involved in EtherCycle and you guys obviously live together. How's that relationship work?
Why, yes, we even sleep in the same bed when she lets me.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know why I framed it that way. But
She's got, she has a Shopify store. A brochure site in which she publishes about Disney World planning, because it's a huge for most people it's like a once in a lifetime hugely expensive vacation. Yeah. So she has all this planning content around it, and then makes money through affiliate marketing, advertising, and print on demand with Shopify, and some e-goods, some info products done through digital delivery. Which, if you ask me what my favorite category of product is, it's digital download. Because that stuff's like 99.5% profit. It's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But it's nice. It's nice for her that she, you know, is married to someone who can provide technical support for her website, of course. But also
24/7.
Yes. But then at the same time, that was used against her in that she was able to, her experience was applied to our business. So she does support and administrative work for us because we have apps. So she's our, like, there's a lot of pre-sale questions. Well, can it do this? You know, can it make the website print cheeseburgers? No, I'm sorry, you can't. We'll add that feature request to print cheeseburgers. And so, you know, she handles that stuff for me.
Yeah. I was going to say, one of the episodes, you actually broke down that business model with your wife and all the Pinterest stuff that, you know, you guys do. And that was really interesting. And that episode has always stuck in my mind for some reason. And I think it's, there's an art of what you have to do that day that you get into Disney World, or the rides that you have to get to and the passes you need to get to the front of the line. And I think some people get that and some people don't. And I was, for me, since we don't have that theme park here, I was like, this is groundbreaking. I need to know this when I head over.
It is. Well, it's wild because Disney World's it's the same size as Manhattan. Mm. It's just absolutely massive. It's like the size of a city. They've got their own power generation and et cetera.
All right. Black Friday. How was that for you and your merchants?
Oh my gosh. Black Friday this year was interesting. So depending on the store, some of them saw, you know, Black Friday was a little worse than the previous year. And some saw it was the same and some saw it was better. This was interesting. But more importantly was, if you looked at all of November month over month or month, all the month of November compared year over year, then things were almost universally better. So, and really the thing that made or break would make or break you was, A, did you have inventory to sell? And most people did. Mm. And then secondarily, well, did you run early bird sales? And so in the US, we had so much national news media and headlines about, like, well, there's the supply chain disruption and no one's going to be able to get anything. So you, and like that, well, what do you do about it? What's the action step if you're just some person? And the answer was always, you just got to do your Christmas shopping early. And this was like as early as September, these conversations started and people are like, no, that's not going to happen. And then by October, they're like, okay, this is for real. And so the brands that ran those early bird sales, usually in like week two November, it did really well. And what's interesting is like the early bird sale really was just a test case for your Black Friday sale. And then if it worked, you just ran it again on Black Friday through Cyber Monday. The only thing I thought was interesting, and I saw this across several merchants, the day after Cyber Monday, that did unusually well. And Cyber Monday almost like universally did not perform the way people expected. I don't have an explanation for this, but I think the thing to note is next year you're shooting yourself in the foot if you don't run the sale early, either as like you're just running it early to everybody, or you're segmenting it to only, you know, everybody who has made a purchase. Hey, you're VIP. Here you go.
I'd love to peel back some of those layers there, because I mean, for us here in New Zealand and largely our listeners here in the APAC region, we've got listeners all over the world, some in the US, but mostly in the APAC region. And for us, Black Friday is kind of still a new thing. I mean, this is something that you guys probably grew up with, you know, all the time. And I'd love to know, how did retail stores pre-e-commerce get the hype going for Black Friday?
That's a good question. So I actually remember the first time someone explained this to me, I was in high school and I was probably like 16, 17. And this guy's like, all right, you want to go shopping on Black Friday? And I don't think we even called it Black Friday then. He's like, you know, the day after Thanksgiving, that's when everything's like 80% off. Like there's no way. It had not even occurred to me. And so we went to a mall, and sure enough, every place we went was like, it looked like a bomb had gone off. It was just unreal. And so I think initially it was like people in the know, like if you went through looking in like the newspaper circular, you knew about the sales. And then it became like, all right, then they had the doorbuster deals. Okay, now this is when everyone starts noticing Black Friday in America, is they'll do these loss leader items where it's like, all right, we've got 20 computers and they're $100 each. And people would line up outside of like a Best Buy the night before. And I actually did this in my 20s, in like early 2000. We went and camped outside of a Best Buy, which is very cold in Chicago in November. Yeah. And witnessed multiple fights over people cutting in lines. Cops showed up repeatedly as a result. And then Best Buy did was they said, here, we're going to pass out. It was like raffle tickets. So it was like the first 10 people in line, here's your ticket and you could go get the thing. And what some of the people in the line did was turn around and sell that to people later in the line. And then when the Best Buy person came out, they're like, all right, we're going to open the store. It turned into just mayhem and people broke the doors down, like knock them off the rails to get into the Best Buy to save a few $100 on some consumer electronics. I was just utter madness. And so I'm glad that that's not really a thing anymore.
Yeah.
And I feel like it can still happen here.
To Thanksgiving.
Yeah, there you go. I feel though that it's still going to happen in New Zealand. Like it's going to get to that stage and then we'll come down. Because right now, Black Friday is coming up. It's a thing. It's getting bigger and bigger. It's on TV everywhere. Yeah. Next year or the year after, there has to be a storming of a store. Gets on the news. And then people are like, oh, we should probably calm down.
Yeah.
The news would run stories like people got trampled at a Walmart. And people being like, hey, I don't want to go or work on Thanksgiving. Because they would like start the sale like 6 o'clock on Thanksgiving. Mm. And finally, you know, I think it was really the 2020 is what broke it, where they said, all right, we're not doing that anymore. And then 2021, they said, we're not doing Thanksgiving anymore. And then now you do like the Black Friday sale online. I don't know. It's different now.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not the madness it once was.
Yeah. For us here, it was almost funny because, you know, we would always once a year on the news, see that it was Black Friday in America and just see all these stores, Walmart, Best Buy, getting their doors crashed in. And we'd always be like, these crazy Americans, don't get offended. But hey, look, that's all filtering through. And I actually love the fact that it's filtered its way into e-commerce and, you know, obviously all these other Click Frenzy, Cyber Weekends, you know, all these events, I think is really cool, especially with the timing being leading up into Christmas. But I mean, other than that, in terms of any other Black Friday magic that you saw that you think our listeners would enjoy?
So a lot of our merchants moved away from straight discounting.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And certainly straight discounting still works, but I think it's smarter to focus on average order value. So rather than try and give up value to make it more compelling, which then only trains people that like, well, this is what it's really worth, right? There's cost to discounts. Discounting is a sugar high. And I remember, you know, in 2020, one of our clients did like the 40% off store-wide estate sale because we didn't know what was going to happen. We're like, let's turn this inventory into cash. And of course, you know, they all sell. You get rid of the stuff and get the money. But, you know, at what cost? Did you make any money? Was it profitable? And so this year, what we saw a lot of people do was add value. So limited edition items. It was like one day only sales, a lot of free gift with purchase in which the free gift is the limited item. Tiered discounts can work as well too. But my favorite is you combine a tiered promo. So like spend 50, spend 75, spend 100 with a free gift with purchase. So like spend 50 and you know, you get item widget A, spend 75, you get widget B. That really works. Free gift with purchase. I swear, this is like my favorite kind of promo.
Yeah, I think there was also a lot of people that I saw who sort of tried to spin Black Friday, not to chew into their profit margins, but to still have some effect there. And they did things like, today we'll double the donation that we normally do based on your purchase to, you know, your given charity. I'm trying to think of another one now, but it's just left me. But, you know, trying to just put a completely different spin on things. Gift with purchase is something I saw a lot. But then also other brands trying to put their own spin in terms of the wording, because I think everyone's got Black Friday sale. So, like I think I mentioned in our previous episode as well, there was a supplement store. It's one of the largest ones here in New Zealand. And they just called it Bulk Friday instead, you know. And some were calling it, another brand was calling it Blue Friday and all these sorts of. Just trying to be different, you know, with a million.
You got to brand it, stand out. Because you know it's the signal to noise ratio gets extreme in their inbox. So if you can stand out in any way, it really works. And what, you know, the emails that I was consistently surprised by and opened were the plain text ones that were from the founder, where it was like a person's name as opposed to a brand name. Those are the ones that like suddenly those really stood out. And those were the ones I opened and paid attention to. I like plain text emails a lot. I think people sleep on them at their own risk.
That's so interesting because I keep saying that to my marketing team and they're like, get out of here. We want to make it all glossy. But yeah, we do see it, you know, working.
I'm a bit like that. When I see the subject line and all of a sudden, for a little while, it caught people's attention. But I think, again, you know, people just get used to it. You know, there's like 15 emojis in the subject line and all of this. And you're just like, okay, they're just definitely trying to sell at me already. You know, I'm too scared to even open this email. Where if it's just an email that says, hi, Waldo, I've got something for you. From Kurt Alster, you know, oh, click on that. What's in here? And it's just, you know, a good body email. And I think at the end of the day, it's really about the value that you're going to give, right? How personal is that message that you're receiving? And then what sort of value is your, you know, the user end user going to get out of this?
Kurt, I got a question for you. Personalization has been really big. And we talk about tech stack quite a bit, the magical tech stack. And so we're fans of Klaviyo, you know, we're fans of Gorgeous. I would love to know, like, what's your like preferred tech stack that you like to, you know, educate your clients with or put together for your clients?
Shopify, Klaviyo, Google Optimize. If I have to pick three things.
Fantastic. Oh, you don't have to pick three things. You can keep going. But I love that you said Google Optimize because I bring that up all the time and people don't understand the power of that tool.
No, they really don't. And that's baffling. Because what's shocking is Google Optimize, number one, it's free. Uh-huh. It's just this phenomenal tool that you don't have to pay for. And then two, it's really easy to set up because it plugs into Google Analytics, which you're probably already running on your store.
Yes.
It's really easy to use.
The interface is great.
I just, you know, I want to make data-driven decisions. Just nothing can be subjective from the gut. I only make decisions with data. And of course, we all know that's a lie. It isn't true. It's like, well, did the data agree with me? Then it's a data-driven decision. And if that were really true, then we would use Google Optimize for everything. I mean, really, you could do split testing with it, which it's phenomenal at, but you can also do personalization. So you can show different elements, messages, headlines, things on the site, new versus returning visitors. Well, that's tremendous.
No, keep going. And there's so much, you know, the IP address from a different country have a slightly different message. You know, I love Google Optimize. I love what you said about data. We used to have a term. I don't think we use it anymore. It was goodbye opinions. Hello, data. You know, and I think some people are like, oh, that's really clever. And some people are like, whatever.
You know, and for some things like it, you could go crazy with like, it has to be data everything. And you're not going to get an answer one way or the other, at least nothing that would be statistically significant. And then in that case, it's like, all right, go with the subjective, do what you like. But you know, really being a, that is the joy of e-commerce, is it's like the whole thing is built in a way to track key performance indicators. So I mean, you could tie everything back to this does or doesn't make the business more money. Yes. That's the magic of it.
Yes. And when you're doing split testing, you know, you have to have the hypothesis at the start and then a conclusion at the end. And then you go, right, we're going again. That worked. That did not work. And like you're saying, it all ties back to KPIs.
The thing I discovered recently, I finally signed up for Good UI. Good UI has a library of tests. But the really cool thing they have is leaked tests. And what leaked test is they notice when a major player like Amazon or Etsy is running a split test. And then what happens to that split test? Do they commit that idea to the site? So you can infer like, all right, if they committed it, that was probably the test winner. And so you can get all kinds of great ideas for stuff to test on your own site by looking at this. And they have a free newsletter where you can get a lot of this info. That's how I started with it. And then, you know, eventually they got me and I subscribed.
Yeah. So that was Good AI?
Good UI.
Good UI. Sorry. I'm just seeing thousands of people just Googling that right now.
See you getting super excited whenever it comes to anything to do with conversion rate optimization or any tactics. And when you mentioned Google Optimize, that's why I've just been sitting back here, because I knew Leo was going to be like, oh my God, fanboy. I just want to use this all the time. He's the type of person who sits at home at 1 a.m. on a Saturday morning doing conversion rate optimization testing with a bottle of red wine next to him. So loves it.
And then I start texting people from Shopify to tell them about what I've discovered on my Google Optimize test. And some of them are like really excited. Some are like, go to bed.
Actually, one of the people that you messaged was the person who actually introduced us, Kurt, which was Julian Bartram, Shopify, the Shopify guy in New Zealand.
Oh, he's a good person. I like him a lot.
Definitely. We've had him on the podcast twice now. And some of our most listened to episodes, because he just spits a lot of knowledge from, you know, a Shopify point of view, but also from a merchant point of view himself as well. And I believe he got a lot of assistance and know-how from listening to you and communicating and training through you as well. So, hey, Julian, hope you're listening to this one, mate. Thanks for the introduction.
Hey, we just talked about Black Friday and all that, but I want to push forward. I want to know about, predictions for 2022 around e-commerce, around what merchants maybe should be doing or anything relating to this eco space. What are your predictions, Kurt, for 2022? Is headless the thing? Is it just 2.0 all the way with everybody?
Well, I think those are Shopify specific predictions. Mm-hmm. I think the larger strategic prediction is that it's going to be harder than ever. I think you have to try harder than ever, because the environment has worked against us. 2020 happened and suddenly a whole lot of businesses had to get online real quick, and they all have access to the same tools. And so they all armed themselves with these great tools. And then 2021 came and we thought, well, what's going to happen? Will that behavior change stay? Will people continue to shop online at the rate they did before? And will these businesses continue to thrive online? And the answer was they did. So now we've got all these shops online. We have more dollars than ever online, people more experienced than ever online. And we've got all these tools. And then on top of it, we have some privacy things that occurred with Apple. Mm-hmm. So now we can't go to the traffic store and buy traffic as easily from Facebook or Google. And we can't see quite the efficacy of our email because it's harder to track open rates. And so suddenly, I think going into 2022, things are a lot harder because your customers are more experienced. So they know this is what a good experience is. So now the bar is raised, right? Because everybody's got these same tools now. And it keeps getting easier to set up an online store. The bar's raised. There's more competition than ever that's getting more sophisticated progressively. And the way you acquired traffic, now suddenly the traffic store, Facebook, the number way most people got their traffic, harder than ever and more expensive than ever. So I think 2022 is the takeaway is you got to try harder to find that competitive advantage.
Yeah, 100%. I think if I could add to that, one of the key things I saw happen in the last 2 years as well is the merchants stepping into online space. There were a lot of them who stayed away from it and just relied on their bricks and mortar channels, wholesale, etc. And I'm talking about large brands like Unilever, Nestle, you name it, all those large ones, PepsiCo, etc. And they started spinning up e-commerce stores for all of their products as well. So those products that historically had a little bit of a niche in the digital space because the channel was set up and everything else was just through retail, were able to pivot really quickly and throw a lot of money into this as well because they're backed by, you know, some of the largest businesses in the world. So that I think also sets the bar up there where, you know, you got these cheaper products coming in backed by billion-dollar companies as well.
No, absolutely.
Now, in terms of, I thought you were going to say something there, Leo, but anyway.
Oh, no, I thought I asked heaps of questions. I was keeping quiet for you to go.
Yeah, no. If I unpack this year, though, I mean, if you love Shopify, if you love e-commerce, this year was a bloody exciting year, right? I mean, we're talking about online store 2.0, sections everywhere that we've been waiting for a long time. Some new news that has just come out in October with regards to Shopify markets and flows potentially creeping into sort of the standard Shopify space. What are some of these things that, or what's your point of view on these amazing changes happening this year?
Well, the Shopify flow, that one's not potential. That was confirmed for me by Atlee Clark at Shopify.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it was in Q1, the way it was phrased, so I don't want to misquote, but the way it was phrased was in Q1, flow will be made available on a non-plus plan. That was the language. Yeah. Mm. So interpret that how you will, but flow will be available outside of plus is what we're hearing there. Shopify Plus is an interesting thing lately. You know, Lauren Paddleford left last summer, and he was the gentleman who helped create Shopify Plus and was there since the beginning and has left. I don't know if he was replaced. I haven't looked. I haven't heard. I don't know. So that was interesting.
We strongly believe that the biggest competition to Shopify Plus is now Shopify.
Yeah, well, okay, so you have that, and then you've got, all right, so flow is not going to be in there. There's fewer reasons to use Plus now. Mm-hmm. Like the moat around it versus Shopify Core has narrowed. And so, and then you hear some of these other things. And then you know, on top of it, Shopify Unite, it sounded like they're like, hey, we're officially supporting headless here. Like we're giving it our blessing. Okay. Interesting. And then on top of it, they added, they just announced their own version of headless called Shopify Hydrogen. Mm-hmm. So maybe Shopify Plus becomes like, you have to use Shopify Plus if you want access to Shopify Hydrogen, at which point you know, the other apps and features that attach to it really become fairly meaningless because Hydrogen, now we've got this like entirely new front end experience that really you need to be quite sophisticated to use.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you kind of are going on the path that I was going to ask about what may then be available just for Plus. And I think you've nailed it with Hydrogen and what Hydrogen can do. And I know we're all, you know, learning, looking, testing, and very excited what it can bring. But until, you know, we see more of that Hydrogen, you know, like you said, that moat is getting thinner. And I feel a lot of clients are now like, oh, so why would I be on Plus? And you know, and I bring up these reasons and they're like, doesn't markets do that? And I'm like, yeah, kinda, which is another topic. And there's something else that got released a couple of months ago. Have you been playing around with markets?
No, Shopify it's early markets. Access here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You can't just sign up for it. No, I've yet to have any experience at all with Shopify markets.
There's a bit of a Hydrogen / Shopify partner town hall just recently where they was largely focused on Hydrogen with a bit of a Q&A with a partner panel, et cetera, as well there. And they did talk a bit more about markets itself. And it seems like it's going to be around or available shortly. And the impact of that, I think it's only positive, you know, specifically for a country like New Zealand. New Zealand relies on exporting basically everything, right? So if you're a successful merchant here, you very quickly spin up or want to spin up an Australian version of your site or an Asia Pacific one, or a US, Canada, UK, etc. And so having Shopify markets is going to make that a hell of a lot more easier. But I do think that if I could make a prediction, it's probably going to be only available on Advanced and Plus, and then flows dropping down from Plus into Advanced. But there's something else taking its place. Now, I can't confirm any dates or technical functionality, et cetera, but I know that, you know, one of Shopify's large competitors in the SaaS space have a very good reputation for B2B or wholesale aspects or wholesale websites. And so I've heard that the B2B aspect coming into Shopify Plus is going to be very exciting, which again opens up a big door, and is something that our merchants have been screaming for.
Well, there is a wholesale channel in Shopify Plus now.
Yeah. Yep. It's
just
not that great. Sorry, Shopify Plus.
It has a series of weird limitations. Mm. Like you have to upload a spreadsheet to change the prices, but there's no actual option to export that spreadsheet. So what happens if you lose the original local copy?
Rude.
You know, maybe that's changed since I last played with it. But yeah, I mean, I made it work for a food manufacturer who had a lot of like grocery stores buy it. But realistically, you know, the wholesale for most stores, we use Shopify Plus and Script Editor. So you tag the customer like wholesale 20, and then they just see everything with 20% off.
Yeah.
So like that solution is there. They just weren't calling it wholesale.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the real complexities come in when you're talking to a customer that's maybe at the moment 90% B2B, 10% direct to consumer. They're obviously wanting to change that over the next couple of years, but they don't want to miss out on this functionality that they can have. And then having all these different tiered pricing plans and volume-based discounts and consignments, if people are ordering consignments, all these sorts of things can be a little bit sticky. So fingers crossed for me in 2022, B2B, step it up, Shopify. Come on, bring it on.
We've done in the past. Sorry, Kyle, I was going to say, we've done in the past, you know, that if they're on Plus, we spin up just another store and then we chuck in some of those really good apps out there like Wholesale Gorilla or I can't remember the other ones that we've used. And that becomes the wholesale channel, which is worse.
I was going to say, I think that's currently the best, most flexible way, certainly, to handle wholesale is you run two separate stores and one lives on a subdomain. So, you know,
yes.
The wholesale or b2b.acme.com. And then that's my wholesale channel. And it's just a separate store behind a password. And then on the front end, you know, acme.com is just my regular Shopify store.
Kurt, I want to know from, you know, agency owner to agency owner, are you like scratching at it? Web 3.0?
Web 3.0. So silly. What? Tell me, what is Web 3.0?
Well, from what I know, it is a combination of cryptocurrency, NFTs, headless commerce. I don't know. There's probably something else in there that I've missed. The metaverse, that's the other one. That's 3.0.
A series of buzzwords amounting to a pyramid scheme for white tech bros. That's what I heard.
Nice. I love the honesty. I love the honesty, Kurt.
We'll have VR and AR, which what they have Facebook decided to rebrand as the metaverse. VR and AR is not going away. I think that's here to stay. You know, but ultimately what a lot of this is driven by is just money seeking alpha, right? Alpha being return on investment. So you've got, if you're someone like Apple, it's a huge publicly traded company. They need to invent a new screen to sell you. And then they can sell you on an upgrade cycle. Guess what? iPhones and tablets and computers, it's slowing down. So these AR glasses are supposedly going to be their next big thing. And Facebook bought Oculus. People laughed at them. They thought that was idiotic. What are they doing? No one's going to buy a video game console from Facebook. And of course, it wasn't true. They made it work. I own 3 Oculus Quest headsets. I love them as gaming devices. I've not done, you know, really, truly, I've not done anything beyond gaming with it. But the idea that like the metaverse, that VR worlds have to brand that as Web 3.0. I mean, if you want to know the real truth of the thing, just look up Google Trends for Web 3.0. Only a few months ago, suddenly it pops into existence. because you had to rebrand crypto, because crypto, NFTs, these things became synonymous with scams, right? Mm-hmm. That's all. It's like, oh, I got the rug pull. You know, and so Web 3.0 was an attempt at rebranding it. And somehow VR got rolled up in there. I don't know. I find that very strange because I dearly love VR. I want to love crypto. I own crypto. You know, let's separate my comments from the usefulness of it and it as an investment. It's two different things. So far, I don't know. I don't like the blockchain. That's, we have a blockchain. So that's how we're going to run metaverse. I mean, it's just a silly concept.
What a smart marketing play by Facebook, though, eh? When people started using the word metaverse and start talking about it, boop, change the name of the company, call it Meta. No one else can have it. Thank you very much. But do you see, if we can gaze into our little crystal ball here, do you see a time where, well, in the near future, I don't know, you know, 100 years from now, it could be possible, but do you see a time in the near future where we'll be able to use VR successfully for e-commerce? Or for shopping itself?
I think it's coming. Yeah. I do. I don't know about the practicality of it. Like, I am bullish on VR. Love it. I think the idea of like creating virtual, essentially you would create virtual showrooms in VR, and it exists now, but they're just not particularly accessible. You need some way on top of the web to be able to access a virtual showroom through a VR headset, but make it like easily accessible to people. And right now that just isn't the case. I think it'll happen. I mean, so like how many years has Shopify supported 3D product media and augmented reality?
Yeah, it's been a while in the world. 3 years?
Yes. How many times have you actually used that?
Well, only because we've got one customer that we built it for, I used it a lot. But actually myself in a sales way, not really, no. Like if someone was trying to sell to me, not really, no.
I have yet to go to a website that used it. The only time is when I went out of my way to download the Magnolia app because I knew it had this feature.
Okay. Interesting. There Interesting.
Is. Yeah. People always say, is this going to happen? Hey, well, have you ever used it? No. Well, then you already know the answer.
I definitely say the uptake is a lot slower than I initially anticipated it would be when it was announced in, say, 2019. I was thinking, oh, this is next. We, you know, Shopify spun up a little store that had, what do you call them? Baby trundlers or
strollers.
Yeah, you can roll a stroller out and you can put it in your boot and it's virtually there. And it was all cool in concept, but yeah, I haven't really used it myself, for sure.
Well, you know, what's funny is in the execution, it's actually really easy to implement.
Yep.
Like the theme in Shopify just supports it. You just need the right file, upload it as product media. And as long as the person views it in Safari on an iOS device, they just load it as augmented reality.
Yep.
I mean, that's really like the damning part of it. It's so easy to implement and it's inexpensive. And yet you'd never see it.
Yeah. And people
and still it's been around
video.
For a couple of years now.
100%.
That's why I'm like, because I love gadgets. I love toys. I love it. I want this and I don't see it.
Leo, it sounds like we should share a couple of websites after this recording with Kurt, customers definitely. That we've built some cool shit for.
Absolutely. It's kind of interesting. I've just dabbled in the NFT in the last couple of weeks. To be honest with you, Kurt, you talked about rug pull. I actually got scammed out of $1,000. It was clever. It was just a direct message in my Discord. I wasn't paying attention. I was like, oh, pre-sale starts now. Yeah, $1,000 gone. I'm like, okay, first lesson learned. But what I saw is the money and the volume going through these sales. We're talking $8 million within like a minute, 10,000 NFTs being sold. And I can see why Shopify's come up and say, hey, you know, we've got crypto, we've got blockchain, you can sell NFTs through Shopify. And that's a really interesting sort of, for me, looking at what's going on around the world.
Yeah, it'll be curious to see how it evolves. I think it's in its infancy. It's just a strange thing to have a combination of like this very, this relatively new technology. Well, the technology is not that new, but like the concept is really new for a lot of people and it has entered the mainstream. That's the new part about it. And then you combine it with the insane amount of money going through it. And mm-hmm. So you can see where like, I mean, it attracts scammers and that doesn't go well. I really, I was bearish on it. I attacked it, but I'm still excited about it. That's the funny part. For like as negative as I just was, I'm still excited for like, okay, what does this look like 10 years from now? You know, did they finally figure out a use for it? How many years have I heard that like, wow, blockchain, wow, that's the future. We're going to store your mortgage in the blockchain. And it never really happens, does it? Oh, you're going to pay for everything with crypto. Also doesn't really happen. Yeah, maybe it's just too soon.
These things conceptually always sound super cool and they get you hyped. And then in practicality, when you start looking at all the litigation and red tape that happens behind closed doors, you start realizing, oh, it's not that practical. Sure.
I don't know. It's coming. I think things are coming. I still like it. Like Kurt said, you know, like it's exciting. I like it. I haven't seen it yet, but you know, if I can get my head around it and be in front of it, there's opportunities for an agency and or agencies around the world right now that they are doing stuff with Web 3.0. So yeah, no, that was my question. We went on a big rant there. So thank you for that.
That's cool. If we bring it back to Shopify, Kurt, I know you guys love using Flex Turbo as themes for your customers. Obviously, Online Store 2.0 has come out. We've just successfully launched a few on OS 2.0. Have you guys actually built a store on OS 2.0 yourselves? And what are your thoughts there?
Yes, is the short answer. I like the expanded section. I like the app embeds, but similar to our previous discussion, I think app developers need more time to get on board and really like support Online Store 2.0. Like Online Store 2.0 is a framework. On Shopify side, it's tooling. It's only as good as the partners implementing it. And so the themes having the expanded section support is great. Give me more flexibility in my CMS. I love it. Having the app embeds and also like as an app developer also solves issues with installs, makes life easier for everybody. But really in Online Store 2.0, the feature I get the absolute most use out of, the thing I love day in and day out, is native meta fields.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. We've heard that same thing. Yeah.
And like meta fields are always available in Shopify, but you had to use an app to handle it. And so that was kind of messy. Now I just add additional field, like custom fields right into my product listing. And so it makes it very easy for anyone to manage these fancier product listings. And so that's the thing I find myself just going back to over and over.
Making life easier for merchants out there already. Sometimes you can get caught up on, oh, there's all these cool things on the horizon coming, but what's the value that it's giving me today? How's it making my life easier today? I know you and Paul talk a lot about, and over the last 6 months have sort of had a few guests on with regards to headless and hydrogen and all of that. Are you guys actually looking into this seriously for the next year, or is this still on the back burner and let's see what happens and let other people dabble in it?
I think there will, it's a tough question. Cause for us, I'm not going to go start implementing headless through, you know, a third party software. I'm mildly interested in experimenting with hydrogen, but realistically, like I just, for the vast majority of people, that straightforward, here is my Shopify theme editor. Just like, make my life easy. I just want to put it up on this, done. But if some people want to be on the bleeding edge or want something very custom, and that's a much smaller piece of the pie. And for those people, man, hydrogen seems like the absolute future for that.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, you've got some awesome stores on the Shopify platform as well. Some that I'm really a big fan of, some like Hoonigan, Jay Leno's Garage. How did you end up getting these accounts? Is there some sort of relationship there, or are you just a bit of a gearhead yourself?
You know, it helps being a gearhead myself. For Leno's Garage, I saw it. One of the guys who worked on the store posted in the Shopify Plus group. And so I just messaged him and he said, hey, let me send you. And I said, would it be helpful if I sent you a screencast? I got some ideas. And I said it to him. He said, this is really useful. And he said, let me send you some detailing supplies. So, all right. You know, I have dirty cars. And from there, the relationship blossomed. And then when I started as a web designer, if you'd said, what's your like dream client? I would have said Hoonigan, this automotive lifestyle brand. And the And they even, the creative director, the co-creator of Hoonigan, it was responsible for my favorite car magazine when I was in my 20s. And then several years ago, I checked my phone in the morning and there's an email from a guy who goes, "Hey, I'm the CEO of this brand called Hoonigan. We're automotive lifestyle. Anyway, we need help before Black Friday." And it was like October 1st. And he's like, "So can we talk?" I fell out of the bed. I read that email like five times. I'm like, is this for real? Like, I really couldn't even believe it. And so we got on the phone and I'm like, all right, I got to make this happen. And so I did. And I've worked with them ever since. And really, it's been quite incredible. And like this guy who, you know, these guys that I knew from YouTube channel, you know, I get to fly out there and hang out with them. It's really quite cool. But then, like, you know, once you have, you know, two brands like that and a podcast in which you talk about being a car guy, well, it's very easy to attract the others.
Yeah, this is going to be my last question, Kurt, because I know you're a busy man and you want to go. And with us, retainers is so important. It's you know, the heart and soul of cyber. Are you like, you have your clients on retainers, you keep them on, or is it all about new sales? How does your model work?
No, we do retainers. A lot of ongoing development work, retained ads work. Works pretty well. Man, well, yeah, adding retainers, which I had resisted. And then, of course, once I did it, then I'm like, oh, this is... should have done this sooner.
Ages ago, like, yeah.
Makes life easier for everybody.
Yeah. You know what? One of the Unites we were at in Toronto, I actually met you at that Unite, and I quickly said something to you and you're like, yeah, okay. See you later, guy. You're wearing your beautiful cameo jacket. But anyway, there was a lady there that was talking about retainers. And she's like, look, I just say right at the front, you're going to spend $100,000 with me and then $100,000 throughout the year. And I remember sitting there going, oh man, that's like the dream. There's no way we can do that. And then fast forward a couple of years, I tell Waldo's like, if they're not spending $100,000 throughout the year with us, we don't want them. Waldo's like, yep, cool. And that's what it is. It's retainers has been the success of our agency.
Yeah, no, it's hugely valuable.
And I think just feeding from other agencies as well, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And I always say e-commerce is such an infant still. It's like a 2-year-old baby, you know, that's yet to mature. And, you know, listening to podcasts like yourself, feeding from the partner network, going to when we still were able to go to, say, things like Shopify Unite in person, for example. Hopefully that comes back soon. You know, these are all things that we need to connect with each other to understand it better. And I think that's one of the reasons why we started this podcast, to bring it back to the start, is we had all this value. You get a lot of people asking you questions. You're like, I'm giving away all this information for free. It's chewing up a lot of my time during the day. Let's spin up a podcast. And I guess, you know, on that note, just want to thank you again for starting your podcast. It was, like I said, one of the first podcasts I actually ever listened to, full stop, apart from Joe Rogan, but who hasn't listened to that for a very long time, right? So yeah, really, really appreciate your time, Kurt. And Leo, I don't know if you want to take us out here, mate.
All I was going to say is I know a lot of agencies are going to be listening to this show today, but I know a lot of merchants will. So hopefully two amazing agencies have come together and made some sort of like baby agency podcast or something. I don't know. And so I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. Kurt, I want to say thank you for your time. It is our final episode for the year. What a way to go on the 50th episode by having Kurt Elster on it. And everybody, enjoy your New Year's. We'll see you in 2022.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to our 50th episode of Talk and Shop with Cyber. That's also the end of season 3 and the last of our podcasts for 2021. Stay tuned as we'll bring you some season highlights as you're on your summer holidays to keep you inspired to think about your e-commerce strategy as you're strolling the beach or on your family road trip. From the team at Cyber, we wanted to wish you all the best for the Christmas and holiday period, and thanks again for all your support through 2021. We can't wait for what's in store for 2022. See you soon.